Fun Ideas Productions presents the Fun Ideas Podcast.
If you're unhappy most of the time, and you're indoors when the sun begins to shine, you're bogged down with responsibility. When the good sun shines, you can come out with me.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold, and welcome to Fun Ideas Podcast number 256. I will be at the Mid-Valley Comic Art Expo in Salem, Oregon on April 20th and 21st, and Shortbox Live in San Jose, California on May 5th, signing copies of my new Turtles book and new Mad books. How do you do? The purpose of this recording is to introduce you to my new book set called Unconditionally Mad, Part 1 and Part B. First, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Mark D. Arnold, and I am the writer of Unconditionally Mad. It's my job. My name is Mark D. Arnold, and I am the writer of Unconditionally Mad. It's my job to... I am the writer of Unconditionally Mad, and it's my job... What's so funny about that? Well, anyway, here's William M. Gaines, Harvey Kurtzman, Jack Davis, Wally Wood, Bill Elder, Al Feldstein, Norman Mingo, Kelly Freeze, Bob Clark, Frank Jacobs, Don Martin, Don Edwing, Paul Coker, Nick Meglin, Dave Berg, George Woodbridge, Mort Drucker, Al Jaffe, Dick DeBartolo, Sergio Aragonés, Angelo Torres, Tom Bunk, John Ficarra, Tom Richmond, Desmond Devlin, Sam Viviano, Johnny Sampson, Bill Morrison, Susie Splab, and many more. And here's the publisher, Bear Manor Media. Available now through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Bear Manor Media. The Fun Ideas Podcast is brought to you in part by Freaky Magazine. I contribute material to every issue, so give it a try.
Hey, kids. Have you read Freaky? The magazine of weird humor for freaks like you. Freaky Magazine is a way-out collection of weirdo comics, kooky gags, photo funnies, social satire, and surreal collage. 52 pages of insanity in the tradition of magazines of yore like Cracked, Plop, and Zap. Special offer for Fun Ideas listeners, get a free sample copy in the mail, made of smelly newsprint and smudgy ink the old-fashioned way. Just message your mailing address to theslowpoisoner@gmail.com. That's theslowpoisoner@gmail.com while supplies last.
Friends, have you tried Lee's Comics? Lee's Comics is better than the leading comic book store. Wait a minute. Lee's Comics is the leading comic book store, based on arbitrary standards set by Lee Hester himself.
Lee's Comics was named as one of the 21 best online dealers by PopOptique.com. To shop the Lee's Comics eBay store, go to eBay and search for Lee's Comics, Inc. That's LEESCOMICSINC, period. Don't forget the period. Mention the Fun Ideas Podcast when you order, and you'll receive a free bonus gift.
Hey, hey, it's Charles Rosenay from the Monkees Interview Show here on Monkey Mania Radio. So proud to announce the release of a brand new book called Not Just Happy Together, The Turtles from A to Z. That's right, the other band besides our Monkees who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, The Turtles, a great new book that's a discography. It's got interviews, it's got reviews, it's got everything you might want to read about. if you're a 60s fan like I am and love the Beatles and the Monkees and the Turtles, not just Happy Together has a front cover and a back cover by Henry Diltz, a foreword by Gary Puckett, and it's published by Genius Music Books, an imprint of Genius Book Publishing, now available from www.notjusthappytogether.com. Hope you pick it up. I know you're going to love it and enjoy all the stuff about the Turtles. Thank you for listening to Monkey Mania Radio. Hey, hey.
In Fun Ideas Productions news, Unconditionally Mad Part 1 and Part B are out, as is Not Just Happy Together, The Turtles from A to Z, AM Radio to Zappa. Currently, I'm working on TV Cartoons That Time Forgot, and a new book called The Magazine That Dared to Be Dumb, The History of Crazy Magazine. All of my books are available through Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and most are available through Bear Manor Media. The Turtles book is through Genius Publishing. On today's show, we have an author who's had three books published featuring actual writings by the infamous movie director Ed Wood. Here he is, Bob Blackburn.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold with another episode of Fun Ideas Podcast. And today I have another person who is an Ed Wood aficionado. he's involved with two different books about Ed Wood. We had Paul Apel a few weeks ago talking about a football script that he had done in the past. And then this is a collection of, or two collections of, like, short stories and writings that I of Ed Wood, and one's called When the Topic is Sex, and the other was called Angora Fever. I know they have longer titles than that. You can fill in the blanks.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So here we have Robert Blackburn. How are you, sir?
I'm good. You can call me Bob. Like Robert's what lawyers would call me, or the police officer, or somebody at the hospital or something.
Mr. Blackburn.
Yeah, exactly. I'm good, man. Thank you much. I really appreciate you doing this. It's exciting to talk about Ed, the little bit that I know, but I had a interesting relationship, friendship with his widow, Kathy. So,
okay. Because that was like one of my first questions. How did you get involved? Why are you such a fan? You're probably a fan before you met her. No,
I was not.
Oh, wow. So how did you encounter or meet her?
Well, you know, and actually it's interesting because this is going to be a memoir that is going to hopefully, well, it should be published this year, which is the 100th anniversary of Ed's birth. It's his centenary. And it's called Kathy Wood and I, and it's going to be through Bear Manor. In fact, Ben Omer was the one who suggested I write this. He and I had been corresponding because of the other two anthologies of Ed's work. He said, you know, you've got an interesting story about your friendship with Kathy Wood. Have you ever thought about doing something? And I thought, well, I kind of had, and I'd written a few things down, especially after she passed away in 2006. But to get back to your original question, I moved to Hollywood in March of 1989, and I moved into an older building, a five-story apartment building a few blocks away from Hollywood Boulevard and Vine Street, literally 3-4 blocks from Hollywood and Vine, the famous intersection here in Hollywood.
Right.
And I used to see a little old lady who was out there walking her dog every so often. And she was my neighbor, and I would just pass her in the hallway and say hi and things like that. And our building at that time, Hollywood, was still a fairly rough area. The gangs controlled it, and you know, on the weekend nights, you'd hear sirens and the occasional gunshot, to be honest. And we had a mix of people that lived in our apartment building, older retirees, young aspiring actors, transvestite hookers, the whole nine yards. And I went to a movie festival, an Ed Wood Film Festival in 1992. So this is like 3 years after I'd actually moved here. And a couple of guys who ran Hollywood Book and Poster this one summer in 1992 were doing these weekend film festivals related to cult movie directors or themes like Biker Chicks from Hell or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they did this Ed Wood one called the Ed Woodathon. And I'm not sure if it's written backwards, so you kind of can't see it, but I still had the original flyer. And they over the course of a weekend, they screened all of Ed's well-known films at that time, Bride of the Monster, Glenn or Glinda, Bride and the Beast, which involves a gorilla, and that's a whole nother thing. Glenn or Glinda, The Violent Years, and of course Plan 9 from Outer Space. There you go. Absolutely. And during the course of this weekend, they also had some of the people that had worked or known Ed come in to do a little bit of a Q&A, including Vampira, Paul Marco, who played Kelton the Cop, Conrad Brooks, Forrest Ackerman was there. So a bunch of people in the world of Ed Wood that were still alive at that time who had worked or known Ed were there. And, you know, I'm just kind of soaking it in. To be honest, your first question about me being a fan of Ed's, I was aware of Ed and I was aware of Plan 9, but I had not seen any of his movies. And that was one of the reasons I went to this film festival, is to kind of jump into the deep end of this filmmaker called Ed Wood. And one of the things they showed, they also showed some kind of rare home videos, home movies, and some commercials that Ed did back in the 50s when he first got to Hollywood. But they also had a British documentary, The Incredibly Strange Film Show, which back in the mid-80s did other cult film directors, hosted by Jonathan Ross, who is a BBC presenter, as they call them over there. And as I'm watching this documentary, I see an interview with this lady, and it says Kathy Wood, Ed Wood's widow. And I looked at this woman and I thought, God, she looks really familiar. And I was sitting next to a friend of mine who played in a rock band called The Muffs here in Hollywood in the early 90s. And I turned to her and I said, God, I think that lady lives in my apartment building. And she said, really? And I said, well, when I go home tonight, I'm going to check the mailbox. I knew what apartment this lady lived in. She was apartment 202. And I get home and I look at the mailbox and it says Kay Wood. And I went, uh-oh, I think this might actually be Ed Wood's widow. I bumped her into her in the hallway about a week or so later, and I asked her if she was indeed Mrs. Wood, and she got all defensive, like, yeah, why do you want to know, you know? That kind of. And I explained to her about this film festival of her husband's movies, and she got all pissed off because she wasn't invited.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, but I figured, tell your story. Why wasn't
she
there?
And so she said, well, who was there, and what did they say, and blah, 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 and why wasn't I in it? And later on, I found out that she had like a secret phone number you had to call. Like, you call, ring once, hang up, call back. So nobody associated with this festival were able to actually get in touch with her and invite her to this screening of all her husband's films. So anyway, now all of a sudden, I realize that this lady lives in my apartment building. And I think, well, that's cool. You know, I mean, I worked in radio, and I was seeing well-known music artists and stuff through the place where I worked at. It was a national radio network, and, you know, Johnny Mathis would show up, or Dolly Parton would show up. So I kind of got used to real celebrities, and that was an interesting thing. But a month or two later, I went to see my friend's band play, The Muffs. They were playing at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And I bumped into the boyfriend of the girl who played in the band, who I knew. And he came up to me and he said, by the way, was that Mrs. Wood that you ran into or that lived in your apartment building? And I explained to him, I said, yeah, it was. He said, well, I heard that Tim Burton is making a film about her husband starring Johnny Depp. And I kind of went, oh, weird. And so the next day I went down to her apartment and I knocked on the door and just to ask her if she was aware of it, because I had a feeling that she probably didn't know anything about it. And I met her kind of again for the first time and told her about this film. And I asked her if she would be interested in me finding out if that was in fact going to happen or if that was true. And she said, yeah, if you would. And the next day at work, I called Warner Brothers and So I know that he had done like Batman Returns or, you know, in fact, her first comment when I mentioned Tim Burton, she said, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Right.
So that was the one film of his that she was aware of. So I thought that was kind of funny. But I did track down his production office. Turned out that they had been trying to get a hold of Mrs. Wood because she was going to be a character in the film, Ed Wood. And she was. She was played by Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm. And, this is a picture of Kathy and Patricia Arquette that I took when they had lunch.
There we go.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Wow. I just wanted to make sure that people can kind of see that. And
cool.
Once Patricia decided to sign on for the film, she wanted to meet Mrs. Wood. Mm-hmm. So they arranged for us to go out and have lunch. And that was the one time that we got to do that. But again, long story getting longer here, obviously. So after finding out that, yes, indeed, they were making a film and Johnny Depp was going to be in it and that the originally Columbia Pictures was going to produce it and put it out, turned out to be Disney eventually. Mm-hmm. They sent me a little kind of a contract because she didn't have a fax machine. I had a fax machine. They said, she needs to sign this thing because she's a character in the film and we want to give her a little bit of money because, you know, we've heard that she's impoverished and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I kind of read over this 2 pages and they were going to give her like, I don't know, $1,500 or $5,000 for her life story, blah, blah. And I thought that, and I showed it to her and I said, you know, I think you might want to get an entertainment lawyer. And she said, could you help me? And I eventually found one through a film editor friend of mine. And his name is Bob Weinberg. And he became her entertainment lawyer and helped her deal with the Disney people who by that time were making the picture. And from that point forward, since she was my neighbor, she became my friend. And I would come down and visit her after I got off of work and from my radio job. And we'd go grocery shopping. We'd go to movies. She loves being with Ed. She always loved films anyway. She loved them as a young girl and, you know, would go see them when she was, you know, a kid up in Vancouver, British Columbia, where she was from originally. And so we would go see movies together and I was with her through thick and thinner until she contracted cancer of the esophagus in 2006 and she passed away. And it turned out I and Bob Weinberg became her two heirs, which in a roundabout fashion makes me one of Ed Wood's heirs, which if you would have told me this when I moved to Hollywood in 1989, I would have just said, no, that's impossible, but it that's what it is. And so I've tried to keep, and I've learned a lot about Ed from being with her. I wish I would have known more when I was with her because I would have asked her more questions, but she might have got defensive and thought I was more like a fanboy and, you know, kind of not wanted to be around me that much. But we were just friends. So I would come down to her apartment after work and she'd tell me stories. And that was always a lot of fun. That's what's going to be in this little memoir that Ben will put out here later this year.
Okay.
And after she passed away, I started collecting some of these short stories out of the men's magazines. Ed worked for a girly magazine publisher called Pendulum Publishing in the late 60s, early 70s. And at that time, eBay was selling adult materials on their website, and I would go on to the adult pages looking for these magazines that had stories or articles by Ed, collected them all. I actually put out one book prior to working with Bear Manor. It was called I know this is all backwards, so
that's it's okay. Called
Blood Splatters Quickly. That was the title of one of Ed's short stories, and it was published through OR Books out of New York, and it has like 33 of Ed's other short stories in it. And when I went to try and do a second volume of it, they weren't interested. And then I found Bear Manor and Ben, and Ben was all excited. And he said yes, because he'd already put out a few books through Gary Rhodes, some of the Bela Lugosi, Ed Wood scripts and things like that. So he put out Dolores Fuller's autobiography also, which so Ben kind of has this Ed Wood thing going on anyway. So he was excited to do this. And we have some other projects down the road that may or may not happen. So I shouldn't talk too much about
that. That's fine. Yeah.
But knock on wood.
Knock on Ed Wood. Yes.
Yeah.
Different questions that came up. Kathy Wood, I'll just say her name.
Yeah.
Did she see the finished product of the Ed Wood film, and did she like it?
She liked it for the most part. I mean, we were both really aware that it was a biopic, and they were kind enough to send her a copy of the script before they even started filming, so we got to read through it ahead of time. The way they meet in the movie didn't happen. I mean, like, maybe 75% of the Ed Wood film is correct and actually did happen. A lot of it's is based on factual things that did happen. Some of it, though, is embellished just by the screenwriters, by Tim Burton himself, just to kind of, because it's a movie. So, you want to do that. But the way in the movie they have Ed and Kathy meeting is Bela Lugosi has been, is at a mental hospital to overcome withdrawal symptoms from his opiate addiction. And Ed goes up there and he's waiting. He meets this cute girl who's knitting booties for her father. And when first time Kathy read that in the script, she cackled. She says, "Booties? I've never knitted a booty in my life." And she was a little upset.
Yeah.
But it turned out that Scott Alexander, one of the writers of the script, he told me later and he told her that it was a nod to his grandmother who used to knit booties. So it was a little inside thing for one of the writers. So she got over that. The one scene, though, that she had a hard time dealing with, even though it did happen, was after the rap party for Bride of the Monster, where Ed dresses in drag and Corlett Pandit is playing the organ and Ed comes out and he's in drag and he does a big dance and then he pulls his fake teeth out and stuff. Kathy, that was the one, even though this was before Kathy's time with him, by a few years, 3 or 4 years, she still kind of got upset seeing him portrayed that way in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She had no problem with Johnny Depp being dressed in an Angora sweater and a skirt. And she was okay with that fact. When they first started shooting the movie here in Hollywood, she was coming home from the grocery store one afternoon and saw the production. They were shooting. She said it was an alleyway somewhere here, and she was walking home and she stopped. We both knew that they were going to start shooting at some point soon. Didn't know where, didn't know when, but she stopped and just had a feeling. She says, and she saw a security policeman there, and she says, "Well, what movie are they making?" And this officer said something about some Ed Wood character. And she said, "Oh, that's my husband." And one of the writers, Scott Alexander, was actually there that day. And he got all excited. He went over and introduced himself to Kathy and took her over to meet Tim Burton. And the producer, Denise DeNovi, was also on set and asked her if she would like to meet Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. She said, "Sure." So they took her to a trailer. And he was all excited. He wanted to pick her brain and talk to her a little bit about, you know, Ed, because he was playing him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he'd done a lot of research, he'd seen all the movies, he'd seen, you know, and read everything he could get his hands on in order to portray Ed. And she chatted with him for about an hour. And I think she kind of fell in love. She was smitten. Here she was, a lady in her early 70s at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell she had a girl crush on him really hard. And it was really kind of cute.
Yeah.
And they were shooting a scene the next day about two blocks from our apartment building here. I'm still in the same general neck of the woods. They moved me next door. When I glance over this way, I'm looking at the building we used to live in, and I live next door now. They, in 2006, the same summer that they, when Kathy passed away, they were renovating the entire building. And they moved all the tenants out, and they moved me next door because they own the same property. But back to this quick story, they were shooting a scene on Wilcox with Ed and Martin Landau, where Martin as Bela Lugosi and Ed are walking up the sidewalk, and Bela goes into his home, "I have no home" speech in the Ed Wood film. And Kathy was invited, and she went down there, and Ed was Johnny Ed, the same thing. Ed was dressed in a suit, and she said, "He looks a lot like my Ed, but he's missing something." And she happened to have this. I don't know if you can see that or not. Does that make sense? There's it's no like cards wallet. Or any. This is Ed's wallet.
Okay, it's a wallet. Yeah.
And it had a few little papers and some things. And of course, there was no money in it because Ed was broke when they got kicked out of the firm. But she loaned it to Johnny to wear, and he put it in his back pocket. And as he walked away, she said, "Now there's my Eddie." I don't know what it was about having the wall in the back pocket. So, anyway, there's that. So,
how did you come along to get like all these short stories? Was that through her or through different sources?
No, it was on eBay. I mean, she.
I mean, you mentioned eBay, but I didn't know if she had like a collection of stuff. So here, you know.
Well, no, I mean, in their personal story, they used to live in an apartment, which is like right across from where I live. It's on Yucca Street. And it was an apartment they lived in here in Hollywood from probably about 1975 to 1978. And Ed was drinking a lot and his health was getting worse. And he wasn't making much money. And by the middle of 1978, they were missing their rent. Like even though the rent was like $150 a month, in today's money, that'd be like $500 or $600. And they missed about 5 or 6 months in a row, and they kept getting notices like, "If you don't pay up, you're going to get evicted."
Right.
And by they couldn't pay their December rent in 1978, and on December 7th, 1978, the sheriffs early in the morning came and knocked on their door and told them they had to leave and they could only take what they could carry with them. And all they had was a suitcase and some papers and stuff. And they called a friend of theirs, an actor named Peter Coe, who lived in North Hollywood. And Peter said, "Just take a taxi up. I'll pay for the taxi. And you guys can stay here until you sort out your, difficulties and your problems." Ed had burned a ton of bridges by then. He had very few friends because he kept borrowing money from people and couldn't pay it back. And he was drinking heavily. And that weekend on Sunday, he'd gone into a bedroom to rest and they had a football game on the TV. This is kind of where Paul got the title of the "I died early the day I watched TV," or "I was watching football the day I died," or whatever that was.
Right.
And they did have a football game on the TV, and a couple of people were there at the house, and Ed asked Kathy to go get him another drink, and she yelled at him and said, "No, you've had too much." And then they were in the living room, and then a friend of theirs walked into the bedroom and found Ed dead on the bed. And Kathy said he had his eyes open as if he'd seen the devil. That was her. That was the way she said it. And then Peter Coe, their friend, came in and shut his eyes for him. And Ed had been a Marine, so he was a veteran. And she had to deal with the Veterans Administration after he passed away. And eventually she moved back to this neighborhood, probably 1980, 81, somewhere in there, a couple of years after he passed away. She kind of moved different places where she could. She had dogs. They were dog lovers, and they still had a couple of dogs. And then she moved back up to this apartment that I ended up moving into when I moved down here and stuff. So
I never knew that. I thought that he passed away in the building where you were saying originally, not getting evicted or anything. So okay.
No. And this was right on the cusp of his notoriety, to be honest with you.
Right.
The Golden Turkey Awards book came out, I think, in 1980.
Yeah.
And that was the one that the two Medved brothers did, where by popular vote. Now, the Medveds themselves didn't pick who the readers of their previous book, The 50 Worst Movies of All Time, were encouraged to write in what their favorite worst movie was and who their favorite worst director was. Well, the overwhelming consensus was Ed Wood and Plan 9 from Outer Space. So I think Robot Monster was a close second.
Yeah.
So that kind of started this whole ball rolling of Ed becoming the cult film director and filmmaker, with college film festivals and people trying to find all of these lost films, and Rudolph Gray starting his oral biography that he wrote called Nightmare Ecstasy, which also came out in 1992. In fact, he was there at that weekend with the film festival. He flew out from New York to sell and sign copies of his book, and I can't remember him talking at the event, but I think he did a signing at the Hollywood Book and Poster Bookstore, where were the guys who actually put on the film festival. So all of this just kind of started cascading, and over the last few years, there's been a lot of discoveries in the world of Ed, like the script that Paul found.
Right.
There's a couple of books that were thought to be lost that have been recently rediscovered and hopefully are getting published and things like that. So, and the world of Ed is fun because I just jumped into the deep end, and I'm paddling. I like dog paddling, trying to stay up with all this. And I'm hoping that we can do some kind of film festival similar to this Ed Woodathon in October around Ed's 100th birthday. That's the dream. So we're going to see what we can do. But
that's really cool. Would that be done in Hollywood in your area?
Yeah. I think it would be fitting for it to be here in Hollywood and stuff. And there's some interest already from the screenwriters from the Ed Wood Film Festival are still both involved in film preservation and film history, as well as being screenwriters, and they're both on board. And a couple of other people that are like Bobcat Goldthwait is a big fan of Ed's, and there are a few people like that I'm sure would want to do something to help. We tried to get Ed a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame back in 1994 when the Disney film came out. But couldn't do it at that time. But some directors like Quentin Tarantino and John Waters and others actually wrote letters of recommendation that Ed deserved to have a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But now it's like $75,000, and we can't raise that on our own. Back then, the Disney people, as part of the publicity for the movie, were willing to take on that expense. Back then, though, it was, I think, 35 or 40 grand, or maybe even a little bit less. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the book. So you've been collecting all this stuff, you said, for...
Yeah.
Did you have it... were you collecting it just for your own amusement or enjoyment?
No.
What was the reason why you were collecting it? Was it to make a book, or...
Here, let me.
Hold up the first book first.
Yeah. I took a couple of. This is. I know it's backwards, but this is Cherry.
Actually, it's not backwards. It looks fine. It says adults.
Does it? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it might be on your screen, but yeah, it's fine here. So
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay, we're good then. This is one that doesn't have any naked naughty bits on the front cover, so I had to get something that was presentable on what we're doing right now. But I would find things like, I know this is going to be kind of weird, but this is one of Ed's short stories called Insatiable.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved, they did a lot. They had different artists that would work for the magazine that would do different type of artwork and stuff. And I was just grabbing these off of eBay as I could. There's another one, Flesh and Fantasy. I purchased about 125 different magazines.
Wow.
Wherever I could find them, I would purchase them. Here's another one. This is called Blood Drains Easily. And these had both the short fiction in them, and they also
Dick Trent is like a pseudonym or something.
Yeah, Dick Trent was one of his aliases, as was Angora.
Okay.
When he was writing for the lesbian magazine. Yeah, he was writing for lesbian magazines, and he would use Angora for the girl. And this is one of his articles.
Mm-hmm.
And the articles were basically essays about different subjects that were like real subjects, like sex in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just kind of riff on a subject. And how he did his research back then, I have no idea, pre-internet. A lot of his stuff was actually spot on. But the publisher needed to have both the stories or the articles in these magazines in order for them to be mailed through the U.S. mails. Otherwise, they would be considered pornographic material. Mm-hmm. But if you had some redeeming literature, quote unquote, or an article, fact-based article, you were allowed to mail the magazines.
Right.
So that's what Ed was doing. He was also writing some of the captions for some of the photo displays and stuff like that. And I mean, he was a jack of all trades at that time. Plus, he was also, this was the early inception of the pornographic movie industry, where they were doing the loops, like the 8mm loops, mm-hmm. like 5 minutes, and they wouldn't show hardcore stuff, but they would have TNA and all that kind of stuff. And Ed was actually directing some of those and writing the little captions that would go along, like title cards, like in old silent movies. So Ed was doing a lot of that. So if some of his articles are actually about the burgeoning porn trade, and, you know, like, how do you get into it? What does it entail? Things of that nature. So, yeah, I was finding these, and mainly to kind of keep an unspoken promise to Kathy to keep Ed's flame alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, well, this was an area that hadn't been tapped, and if I can find enough of these, and if I could find a publisher, it would sure be nice to get them out there for the Ed Wood fans, you know, just the general. And the very first book actually got, they've all gotten interesting reviews, I'll put it that way. But for the most part, they've all been positive. And I think a lot of reviewers and even a lot of readers are surprised at how good some of the stories are. You know, Ed loved twist endings, just like a Twilight episode. You know, you like to have a little twist there at the end. So Ed was good at that. And, you know, people ask, well, are they as good / bad as the films? Well, yes. They're similar to that. I actually prefer his writings more than I do the movies. And I love the movies, but I think the writings are actually a deeper, because there's more of them, and he riffs on a lot of subjects closer to him, was like death and women's clothing and things of that. I mean, we haven't really brought up his transvestism yet, but he was a well-known as a transvestite here in Hollywood. His first real movie, Glenn or Glenda, was probably the first major feature film that really focused in on transvestism. So the LGBTQ community have kind of taken that to heart and stuff. And I'm trying to get a film screening. There's a local gay and lesbian center here in Hollywood. And I used to be a sound designer for plays, and I did a few plays there, so I know some of the people, and I'm trying to have them do a screening of Glenn and Glenda in October with drag queens and the whole nine yards. So we'll see how that works out. I will let you know.
Okay,
you're invited.
Well, thank you.
You don't have to dress up.
All right.
or will I?
Which of your books was the first one? Which one did you?
The Blood Splatters Quickly was actually the first one.
Okay. And I didn't get sent a copy of that one, so I don't know.
No, different publisher.
I see. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And I don't have a good relationship with them. They actually
that's okay.
have put out. Well, they licensed it to a company in Brazil that put it out, and I get no residuals or anything like that. I wrote an introduction to all three of the books.
Right.
And they don't have me listed. They only have me listed as an editor, and not as, like, quote unquote, owning the Ed Wood stories, which, as being one of the heirs of Ed's estate, I may or may not, but they didn't even see me as maybe. Wow. So I don't really have a very good relationship with them, but I have a really good relationship with Ben at Bear Manor. So,
okay. Well, since you brought up the first book, I still want to ask a couple questions about it, even if talking about the publisher. The theming of that is, did you try to keep it all to a similar theme that Ed was writing subject matter wise? Or you, I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your question.
Did you compile these, I guess?
The very first one, since Ed wrote under these different aliases like Dick Trent and other people like that, the very first book, I wanted to make sure, I have a copy of Ed's resume from 1974-75, and he lists the stories that he wrote under the titles of those stories. So I knew when I was looking for these on eBay, even if they didn't have Ed's name listed, if they said like Blood Drains Easily or Blood Splatters Quickly, I knew from his resume that he had written it. So right. I would purchase that magazine either by bidding it or, you know, buy it now. And when I got it, I would see if he used his own name. A lot of times he did. He used Ed Wood Jr. And it was always Jr. Everybody just calls him Ed Wood. That's because of the movie. I always call him Ed Wood Jr.
Yeah,
because he had a dad who was Ed Wood.
Well, it does say Junior, like on the copy of the DVD here, Edward D. Wood Jr.
That's how he signed his name. That was exactly what Kathy told me. She said, you know, he would, in fact, when he would sign it shorthand, it would be EDW, like EDW dot Junior JNR. You know, he was like old school like that. In fact, let's see if I can do this. So anyway, so the very first book, I wanted to make sure that all of those stories were Edward D. Wood Jr. stories. They were signed in the magazines as Ed. I just because I didn't know if that might be the only book of his I ever got out. At that point, it was. So I just wanted to make sure that those were for him. And as I started collecting more and I decided that I had enough to do a second book, I approached this publisher and I guess the sales weren't what they were hoping for, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that's when I found Ben. And at this point, it didn't matter to me if they said Ed Wood or they said Dick Trent or they said Angora or any of his known aliases. So that's what we went with. And same with the articles. So that was basically it. Now, in as far as the articles, I did, those are themed. I you know, like sadism or cross-dressing or lesbianism or politics. Yeah, Ed wrote like about the busing, you know, in Boston or film, you know, because some of the chapters just like have to do with making movies, and then the other ones might have to do with sex around the world or articles that he found in the newspapers that, you know, titillated him and he thought he would share with his readers. I don't know who he thought his readers were, because I doubt they were actually reading. They were looking at the pictures. Let's not fool ourselves here, right? So anyway, but I just wanted to show you this real quick. This is one of Ed's books called What's the Difference? It was a book. It doesn't have anything really to do with the Watts riots, except they're kind of a backdrop. But this is, I don't know if you can.
You signed it. Cool.
And this came from his personal collection that Bob Weinberg and I inherited, and we split them when Kathy.
Now, who is Bob? Explain who Bob is.
Bob was Kathy's entertainment lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And
You mentioned him. That's right.
Yeah, and he
I forgot his name.
He did a lot of work for her pro bono. And he was a good guy. His hair's longer than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he and they became good friends also. So when she passed away, she divided her estate between the two of us. And Bob is going through some health issues right now. So we've actually had to sell a couple of his signed books by an auction house. And we did two. Well, we actually sold six books last October. Three of them were unsigned. Three of them were signed. And we got $750 for one of the signed copies. But we got $3,500 for one and $3,700 for the other one.
Wow.
We have four more that are going to be auctioned here in mid-March.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're hoping to get a little bit. If we could get close to that, we would be happy because it helps pay his medical expenses and stuff. Right. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's been kind of difficult.
So what was the first one that you did for Ben then? Which book was that?
It was Angora Fever.
Oh, okay.
And it was a guy, and I don't know if you'd seen the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is actually Ed.
Right. Yeah,
and he's taken from Glenda.
I've actually seen that photo before, or I've seen the
there,
movie.
So, there you know, go.
So I knew it was Ed immediately.
Okay, that's
what
good.
I didn't know when I got the books from you is, was this writings of him or about him or by him? And then, you know, going through it, I go, okay, so he's written this. And
Right.
I knew he did a lot of writing other than doing films, but I didn't know to what extent. I didn't know which type of publications, if they're all
right
below the board or whatever.
Right.
You know, it sounds like he didn't do much mainstream stuff, maybe some paperbacks or something like that.
Even the paperbacks were published by, can I say mob controlled interests in the publishing business?
Sure.
I mean, they were for the adult paperback trade, even though they're the most unsexy books in the world. Yeah. And again, it was Ed just kind of riffy. He would come up with characters and scenarios and a twist ending if he could come up with something. And, you know, like hard boiled, they're very much kind of film noir-ish kind of books. Like his first real novel that's well known is called Black Lace Drag, which was retitled Killer in Drag. And it's about a transvestite hitman for like the mob, you know, who in order to do his hits wears women's clothing so he can get closer to his victim and all that kind of stuff. And there was actually a sequel to that, which was Let Me Die in Drag. So Ed would riff on certain things. And then like this Watts book and one called Tony Black Tigress. And here's the death of a transvestite. This is the original paperback for that. And this is one here. I should take this out of the little plastic covering so you can see the book clearer. This is called Drag Trade. And I am 100% certain that is Ed on the cover.
Wow.
Because it looks just like him. And it wouldn't surprise me if he said, I'll pose for the photo. Right. I wrote the book. I'll pose for the cover.
I assume on your collections, there's nothing from those type of paperbacks because they're too long, right? Because you're focusing more on short stories. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
In your books, you don't have anything from those paperbacks because you're focusing more on short stories, right?
Yeah. And a couple of the paperbacks were legitimately republished in the 90s when Kathy was alive and Bob the lawyer had gotten her some copyrights on some of Ed's books. So
that's cool. Okay.
We were able to get some of those republished. There was like six titles that have not been republished yet that I'm hoping that Ben and I will be able to get those out down the road. Some of these books have been bootlegged and they show up on Amazon and stuff. And I don't have clear copyright ownership because Edward Wright was, like I said, you know, mob controlled publishers back then. We don't know who these people were that owned these businesses. Right. If any of their, you know, heirs still exist, I have no idea. When I got these short stories republished through Ben and the other book publisher, I didn't get permission from anybody. I just assumed it, like being one of the heirs, I have as much claim to them as anybody. So let's just put them out there and hope that nobody gets ticked off and comes after me.
Right.
So far, nobody has. I've lucked out. And I'm hoping that that's the case with some of the paperbacks, because a lot of the fans, the Ed Wood fans, have been clamoring for these. Anytime somebody posts about one of the books, like, you can find them on eBay occasionally, but anywhere from like $200 to $400 or $500 or $600 for a paperback. So when somebody says, hey, I got this on eBay the other day and I read it and it's really great, and, you know, people go, well, why can't I get a copy of it? You know, and I want to make them available to the mass fans out there at some point down the road. So that's another check off for my list for Kathy Wood to, you know, Ed, I'm trying to do what I can do to keep Ed's, you know, his work and things that he did alive out there and stuff. So as far as the movies, we, as the heirs, have really no, as far as I know, any claims to them. We've never claimed to say that we have rights to them, because the rights in the films are a lot goofier than they are to the publications. Wade Williams, who recently passed away, claimed to have ownership of a lot of Ed's works, but that's
what it says on this one, Plan 9. That's what I was checking.
I mean, Wade's name is on pretty much a lot of Ed's works and stuff, whether or not he actually, I mean, if you tried to reproduce it and make your own video based on a Plan 9 film or something, Wade would have come after you claiming copyright for whatever reason, and he did do that. So I don't know. So I don't worry so much about the movies. There's been other people that have put out films that Ed worked on or has had some kind of connection to, and I would just like for them to be nice enough to send us copies of them, you know, gratis, so I don't have to go out and buy, you know, something that has Ed's name on it and stuff. One thing that I'm also hoping to do here in the future is Christopher Apostoloff, who is the son of Stephen Apostoloff, who is the film director that Ed worked with on things like Orgy of the Dead and Class Reunion and some of these like TNA films in the late 60s and through the 70s, has some unproduced scripts that I've seen that Ed wrote and his dad bought from Ed just to give him a few hundred dollars so he'd get some booze and food and dog food and help pay a little bit of the rent. And I talked to Chris about, because I've asked Ben about this, us publishing some of Ed Wood's unproduced scripts. So hopefully that'll come out at some point this year too.
Cool.
And I have a couple other of Ed's scripts that were unproduced that weren't associated with Stephen Apostoloff that I'm hoping to also get published at some point in time. Like Trial of Terror, kind of a jungle movie with a twist ending, which I'm not going to ruin.
Going back to the writings that you're compiling and stuff like that, more than the films. Do you know enough about what Ed did to get these assignments? I mean, I know you said they was working with the mob, but I mean, was he given a topic to write on, or was he given free reign? You know, did he have a regular column, as it were, in these various publications?
He was a staff writer for Bernie Bloom, who ran Pendulum Publishing. So he would go to the office and, you know, they were putting out, I don't know how many men's magazine every month. I would say maybe 10 issues, maybe 20 issues with different titles. Just a ton. And with different kind of orientations, like they had one for voyeurs, you know, like Peeping Toms kind of one. So Ed might write a story that had that in as part of the hook for that particular story for that particular magazine. They did, you know, girl on girl kind of stuff. So Eddie would write as Angora, and he might have a story about lesbian seduction or something of that nature. So he would try and do his stories towards what he thought the readership would be, but no, it was a paid job. It was like he had a little office cubicle. Mm-hmm. There are other staff writers that also wrote short fiction or articles or the copy for the photo layouts and stuff like that. So that was basically what he would do. So, mm-hmm. But the novels, that was different. They would get paid a little bit more, like $300, $400 for a book, which Ed could type out within 3 or 4 days, basically. Mm-hmm. He would just sit down and he'd drink and smoke and maybe wear his out. His drag name was Shirley. So he would maybe get dressed and put on one of his Angora sweaters and drink and type and work all night and pop out a couple of books every few weeks or every few months or whatever it was, just to help pay the rent and buy the dog food and the cigarettes and the booze. Mm-hmm.
To your knowledge, was writing easy for Ed? It wasn't something where he got writer's block or something a lot? Or
you know, I don't think he did from everything that I've heard from what Kathy told me and from what other people who are more expert on Ed than I am. I mean, mm-hmm. Supposedly when he was in high school, he won a contest in the state of New York for the fastest high school typist. Mm-hmm. So he could type very fast. When he was in the Marines, he also worked in, even though he went overseas, he went to Okinawa and Tarawa and these other places. He was not in the first wave of Marines that would go in and stuff. He would come in maybe a week or so later, and he worked in the office of whoever his commanding officer was, like a colonel so-and-so, and he was doing a lot of typing and things like that. And he was stories, there was a couple of writers. Leo Eaton was a writer who went on to another career in film and other things. But as a young man in his 20s, he worked at Pendulum for a few months and got to know Ed a little bit and was surprised, because Ed would always tell him about making movies with Bela Lugosi. And this Leo guy was, there's no way this old drunk used to work or make movies with Lugosi and stuff. But he also said that Eddie was like one of the, he would work. The other guys would goof around, but Eddie would be in his little cubicle, because these were all younger guys and they're around all this TNA kind of stuff. You know, they spend as much time looking through the magazines as writing for the magazines. Mm-hmm. And Ed would just, that was his job. And he would just, you know, he would just turn these things out. So mm-hmm. Hopefully that answered your question.
Now, when I interviewed Paul April about that football story, right. One of the things he said was that was kind of out of character, for lack of a better term, for Ed, because he wasn't really a fan of sports or anything like that.
Right.
In your compilations or things you may not have even compiled yet, what's the most out of character extreme thing you've come across?
Wow. Boy, that's a good question. there was a book, and hold on 2 seconds here. What, sure. I have this. Ed wrote a book. This is a reprinted book that is no longer in print. Sex, Shrouds, and Caskets. There was a couple of books that Ed wrote where he did like case histories of sadists and murderers and serial killers of the 16th, 17th, 18th century, people's names. And at first I thought he made these up. I said, I never heard of this. I mean, I heard of like the countess that used to kill virgins and put blood in her bathtub and take baths in just virgin blood. I mean, I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. But he had, I don't know, 9 or 10 different short sequences in this book. And as I'm reading it, I'm going on Wiki and I'm looking up and I go, oh my God, this person actually existed. And that kind of blew me away because I don't know how Ed did that kind of research in the 60s or the 70s. Even going to your local public library, which I'm sure Ed did because he lived fairly close to a couple, both when they lived in North Hollywood and then also here in Hollywood, they lived within a half a mile of a public library. So he had access to that. But where he got his information from, I have no idea. But that's the kind of stuff that just kind of knocked me out. I went, and he never fails in his syntax. He has really weird syntax. And he also has some phrases that he likes to use in his short fiction that is unmistakably Ed. They're tropes that he uses and words like capture. I can't even explain, like he captured her look, or something about the way he uses words is unmistakably Ed. And he never fails to crack me up when I read something that I go, oh my God, that is just so Ed Wood. And and those are in all of these short stories and even in a lot of these articles and essays that he did, that he would go off on a riff. And some of these are essays, he does these fake interviews, you know, like, oh, we spoke to so-and-so on the street about this or that. And he's just making them up. It's all fiction.
That's funny.
You know, he's just,
you know, I think Ed Wood's output seems very interesting, more than I would expect, just because of the wide variety of topics that he covered, you know. And it is kind of interesting what you were saying, that you always can kind of tell an Ed Wood piece, so in saying that, I guess at this point, I just wanted to have you, you know, re-promote the books. You can promote the Bear Manor ones at least. And
absolutely.
And, you know, if you want to order them, you know, it's through the usual suspects, but you can say how you can order them.
These are there, and it's Angora Fever, which are the short stories. They're fiction. And when the topic is sex, which are the quote-unquote articles or basically essays, and half of them are fiction, because it's hard to tell fact from fiction with Ed sometimes, and to Bear Manor Media. And I want to thank Ben Omert for being so gracious in everything he's done. And hopefully down the road, we have some more projects that'll be coming out, especially to mark Ed Wood's 100th birthday. See, I said Ed Wood and I didn't say Ed Wood Jr. But
Edward D. Wood too. Jr.
Yeah.
I know I've been saying Ed Wood too, but you know, it is habit out of the film, you know, because, you know, the film is called Ed Wood and it's easy just to do. So, yeah.
And when people hear it, they know who you're talking about. So I just get picky about myself sometimes. But yeah, through Bear Manor. And I guess, Ben, is some of it's, I mean, you can go on their website, but I know you can also buy them through Amazon. So, and I was going to say finer bookstores everywhere, but I'm not really sure about that.
Well, I know usually, because I'm also with Bear Manor for most of my books, you can order through Barnes & Noble and things like that. If you can't find it in the store, you can certainly order it through their website. So, you know.
Well, yeah, there you go.
And
it's been nice chatting. Now, you know, you live up in Springfield, right?
I'm in Springfield, Oregon. So
I grew up in Portland.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, my dad was in radio there.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Yeah, so for many years.
Very good. And one last thing. Are you definitely doing this Ed Wood show, you said, you know, presentation or whatever? So when is that again?
I am hoping to have some kind of celebration for Ed Wood's 100th birthday in October here in Los Angeles and Hollywood area. So more about that later. As I know more, I may drop it in the comments of this on YouTube. If this ends up on YouTube, I'll post it there about it. And I do have, for anybody interested, I do have a private Ed Wood Jr. Facebook group. If you just search Ed Wood Jr., that to differentiate it from other Ed Wood groups, there's like an Ed Wood Appreciation Society and some Edward D. Wood Jr. group and stuff like that. But mine is private. And I just ask people to let me know what their interest in Ed is, and I'll be happy to add them. And it's a interesting mix. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Joe Blevins, who puts out the Ed Wood Wednesdays blog, which is on his, God, now I'm forgetting the overall name, but it's Joe Blevins, Ed Wood Wednesday. And he's been doing it for, seems like forever, but about 8, 9, 10 years. And he actually reviewed every single short story in these books and every single article and essay in both the books, and for a deeper dive into those stories and the articles, it's a good place to go too. So there you go. And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. And we've been talking with Bob Blackburn here about Edward D. Wood Jr. and his writings, his films, and other things. Hopefully you'll get that show going underway for his 100th birthday anniversary, as it were. And look forward to some new books from you coming out in the next years or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was a pleasure talking to you. And when another one comes out, give me a call. We'll have you back on the show.
Thank you so much, Mark. I really appreciate it.
All right. And this is Mark Arnold with another Fun Ideas podcast, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Bob Blackburn, for being my special guest. Remember, you can always watch the video version of this episode on YouTube. Episode number 257 will be coming soon. If you would like to comment and or be a guest on this podcast, please drop me a line at funideas.mark@gmail.com. Become a free subscriber or a paying Patreon at Mark Arnold Fun Ideas Productions. If everyone listening just contributed $1 a month, it would be a tremendous help in continuing the production of my books and this podcast. The opening and closing music for this podcast is provided by Elmo and Almo. This has been the Fun Ideas Podcast. This has been Mark Arnold speaking. This episode is copyright 2024 Fun Ideas Productions. Thank you and good night.
You're bogged down with responsibility.